From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The state of environmental policy is in flux. 55 years after the first Earth Day, Americans are divided on environmental policy in a way that wasn't always true. In states like Illinois, Democrats are pushing to transition to cleaner energy sources, though not fast enough for some activists. In Washington, however, under the second Trump administration, environmental policies are being rewritten, in some cases turning back the clock decades.
Yesterday, the Environmental Protection Agency announced what it called the biggest deregulatory action in U.S. history.
President Trump has issued a flurry of executive orders designed to cut back on U.S. environmental protection.
Carbon emissions, which help drive that warming, are also at record levels. President Trump and his administration argue that this is not a problem.
The proposed rollbacks would impact dozens of rules, from emissions limits for power plants and vehicles to waste water regulations and air quality standards.
We're talking about going back to the 1970s era where these rules didn't even exist yet.
On his first day in office, President Trump withdrew the U.S. from the Paris Climate Accord. He's tried to freeze billions in funding for clean energy projects, wants to boost coal production, and declared a, quote, national energy emergency.
Given all that, we thought Earth Day presented an ideal opportunity to check in on the state of the environment and environmental policy here in Illinois. Now, as an aside, if you're thinking, wait a minute, wasn't Earth Day a week ago? Yes, you would be correct. We originally planned this conversation for last Tuesday, but we postponed so we can talk instead about the death of Pope Francis. That said, onward, and joining me today to talk about this is Jennifer Walling, Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Jen, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much. Always great to be on.
Also with us, Jack Darren, Director of the Illinois Chapter of the Sierra Club. Jack, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
And finally, we're joined by Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco, Midwest climate reporter for Chicago public radio station WBEZ and GRIST, the climate-focused news site. Juan Pablo, welcome back to you as well.
Sure thing, Brian. Happy to be here.
And listeners, you too can join the conversation today by calling 800-222-9455. What do you think is the state of Illinois' environment and environmental policy? And beyond the state, what do you think of our national direction on environmental issues? 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Jen Walling, Illinois Environmental Council, I'm going to start with you. And in a general way, what do you think is the state of Illinois' environment and environmental policy?
Thanks, Brian. It's really tough right now to talk about the whole situation, especially with what's going on at the federal government. Maybe Jack can be more positive, but I see the things going on at the federal government that have the possibility to tear down and erode things that folks have been working on for decades and cause permanent destruction to different pieces of our health and well-being, clean air, clean water, clean land, that is really troubling. And so I look at that and I'm optimistic in Illinois. And I'm really proud that Governor J.B. Pritzker is our governor. And I'm really proud of the work that he's doing on environment and climate. And it makes me feel very positive about the leadership and very positive about where Illinois is going. I think he's been a national leader on climate and continues to be. I want him to win the race to the top on climate, but I'm concerned.
Jack Darren, same sort of level setting question to you. What do you think is the state of Illinois' environment and policy here?
Yeah, I think, you know, on Earth Day, and I know Earth Day was last week, but for Jen and I, we try to make every day Earth Day, right? So this is a great day to talk about this. You know, that was 55 years ago when Americans came together and said we've had enough of rivers on fire and losing our public lands and breathing dirty air. And we've built so much and won so much as a country. It really is one of the things that makes America great, is what we've been able to accomplish together, almost always in bipartisan fashion. And while the political winds have sort of changed over time, of course, in our federal government. We're living through something that's rather unprecedented right now. We've had different administrations sort of use the environmental protection capacity for different goals over time. This administration is dismantling the very framework for our capacity to do that. And it really raises the stakes for Illinois. Illinois is unquestionably is so much better off for not only what our federal government has done, but what our Illinois government has done. Actually, the Illinois EPA predates the US EPA by a little bit. And we've been making a lot of progress on air and water pollution. As Jen said, we've taken huge strides on acting on climate in recent years, but it's really up to us for the foreseeable future if we want to not only sustain the progress that we've made, but if we want to keep addressing the mounting challenges of our time.
All right, we've heard a number of comments now about what the Trump administration is doing to roll things back. So Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco, I'm going to bring you in to get into some of those details. And maybe we can start, based on your reporting, about cuts to federal agencies like the EPA. How has that affected things here in Illinois?
Yeah, to start off, it's important to say that just like last week, about 280 EPA employees working on environmental justice programs received a notice that they were going to be eliminated in a couple months. Another 175 were reassigned within the agency. Lee Zeldin, the Environmental Protection Agency's administrator, has said that he wants to cut the agency's budget by about 65%. And as a quick reminder for everybody, the EPA is the agency, the federal agency that is, that's responsible for monitoring things like air and water and making sure both are clean. At any rate, I think that the big changes at the EPA besides massive staffing cuts would also be big policy changes. So think the EPA wants to roll back big key environmental regulations. So that includes things like limits on tailpipe pollution and smokestacks, protections for wetlands. EPA employees I talked to are now worrying that the cuts and changes, policy changes, that is, that those could compromise just the very fundamental functions that the agency is tasked with. So like, again, protecting the air, the water, and just the basic health of the country.
Jen Walling, as you survey what's been happening, what are some of the other areas where you are seeing federal government decisions setting back environmental policy, potentially here in Illinois?
Well, beyond US EPA and also things that regulate our food, I think there are pieces related to agriculture. We saw some challenges to the Illinois Eats program. We've seen challenges towards nonprofits. I'm also really concerned about our public lands. We saw a third of the employees at Midday Wind be cut just in a single day. We don't even know the full impact of National Park Service or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service employees that are within Illinois.
For some of our listeners who may not be familiar, that's Midday Wind National Tallgrass Prairie, yeah, south of Joliet, a big federal preserve area.
Exactly. Yeah. Midday Wind National Tallgrass Prairie is a unique and important habitat, but our public lands are unique and important habitats that we won't get back if we're not staffing them, if we're not taking care of them, if they're sold off. These are our precious resources. They're part of the outdoor recreation economy. They're part of tackling climate change. And, I think people are going to be surprised when they try to go visit national parks this summer by the lack of services, the lack of capital improvements. It's going to be a real challenge. And I think, we're seeing that by being done by the federal government in a way that could be permanent.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I've actually been talking to family members and trying to steer some of them away from planned national parks vacations because it seems like could be chaotic at best. Juan Pablo, you've also reported on farmers being affected by some of these federal funding cuts. What's going on there?
Right. So the Trump administration froze funding from the Inflation Reduction Act. That's that landmark climate law from the Biden era. And that's affected all kinds of programs and people across the country, including farmers. And that's because one of those programs that was affected was the REAP program. That's the Rural Energy for America program. It was originally created in the 2008 Farm Bill, but it was supercharged by funding from the IRA. So, for example, The year before the IRA went into effect, Illinois was allocated something like a couple million dollars from this program. But after the IRA, it was closer to something like $120 million, so huge numbers. And this money was all supposed to make it easier or like cheaper for rural communities to adopt renewable energy. So the program would reimburse farmers and small businesses too for some percentage of the purchase of something like a solar panel or even an energy efficiency upgrade or update. Those updates were put on hold earlier this year as part of some of President Trump's executive orders. All to say, so farmers were worried that they'd be stuck holding the bag, that they wouldn't get their reimbursement back. It seems that there has been some changes on that. Grantees, recipients of those of expecting those reimbursements, just have to change their project proposal and eliminate any reference of DEI. And we're still waiting to hear how that goes and if those reimbursements do come through.
Sorry, and I don't know if you explained IRA. That's just for the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed in 2022 during the Biden era. You know, it was about drug costs and healthcare expense, but also hundreds of billions of dollars in clean energy projects. All right, so Jack Darren, how does Illinois compare, this blue island in the red Midwest? How do we compare to some of our other states?
Well, we're fortunate that we do have a governor who's led on many of these issues. We have we've got a history of exceeding federal minimums. You know, the system of environmental protection has always been a partnership between the US EPA at the federal level, which kind of sets minimums that no state should go below, right? We share Lake Michigan with three other states. We share the Mississippi River with other states. And it's always been that each state would at least do a basic minimum, and states could go stronger than that if they want. Examples of that here recently are, you know, Illinois has stronger protections on cleaning up toxic coal ash that's accumulated around our coal plants, around protections for our drinking water and farmland from CO2 pipelines that have been proposed in our state, and carbon sequestration. But those federal minimums have always been there for us to build on. And once those start to go away, both the laws that create those minimums, but also, Juan Pablo, you mentioned the monitoring. A lot of this, to see how we're doing, depends on data that US EPA has long provided about the health of our air, our water, and our land. And so we're doing okay, and but we need to do more. And I think we're probably going to have to evolve as Illinois state agencies to be more of a leader of our own environmental goals, as opposed to ones that primarily implement the goals that come from the federal government, unfortunately.
I mean, do you look to like California, which obviously is a much bigger state, can set, you know, to some extent, like vehicular policy for the nation based on their emission standards, for example? Does Illinois have room to maneuver in that realm?
It does. And that's a really big way in which Illinois could step up. So most big states, particularly big, currently blue states, have adopted these cleaner vehicle standards, which not only are critical for health by cutting down on diesel from trucks and smog from cars and carbon pollution from both, but also, you know, Illinois made a priority of trying to really focus on building the electric vehicle economy as a huge part of our job creation and manufacturing support. This is the best thing Illinois can do to help achieve those both environmental and economic goals is, you know, these standards are under attack. The 14 or so states that have chosen these higher standards, Trump is going after them. And we need Illinois in that fight, not only for our own economy and health here in Illinois, but to make sure that these cleaner standards survive for the future.
Jen, what do you think about that? And we need to take a break in about a minute and a half here. So, you know, in terms of where Illinois is Illinois going far enough? Could we be going farther? Where do you think that stands?
I definitely think that Illinois could do more and go farther. But of course, there are folks that have said we move the goalposts. I mean, we don't move the goalposts. We know where we want to go, which is an economy where we don't have carbon emissions, and an economy where the environment is being protected, people's public health is being protected, And I think that when we look at other states, there's parts where we're really winning with our Climate Equitable Jobs Act and where it's going. There's parts where the federal government can interfere with some of that, but we have our plan. We're moving forward with our plan. I think when it comes to transit and transportation, building electrification, hard to decarbonize industry, nature-based climate solutions, there is so much that we can do, so many great policy recommendations, so many things that will be great for our quality of life and our economy. And I look forward to our governor putting together a plan to tackle all of those things. I'm optimistic about what we can do in Illinois in the face of huge challenges. And when you I keep citing this University of Maryland study that says that we can achieve 45 to 65% emissions reductions by 2030 with states and the private sector alone. So we're n not all is lost if the federal sector doesn't want to be a part of this planning. So I think that's optimistic.
All right. We are going to continue this conversation after a break. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. 1 week after Earth Day, what do you think is the state of our environment? More to come here on the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today we are talking about the state of Illinois' environment in 2025 and our environmental policy. We wanted to bring you this conversation last week on Earth Day. We rescheduled after the death of Pope Francis, but we are here today talking about this with Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco, Midwest climate reporter for WBEZ and GRIST, the climate news site, Jack Darin, director of the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club, and Jen Walling, executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Will you indulge me a minute while I just read here from the Illinois Constitution, Article 11, Section 1, the public policy of the state and the duty of each person is to provide and maintain a healthful environment for the benefit of this and future generations. And Section 2, Rights of Individuals. Each person has the right to a healthful environment. Each person may enforce this right against any party, governmental or private, through appropriate legal proceedings and subject to reasonable limitation and regulation, as the General Assembly may provide by law. So a healthful environment is actually in our state's governing document, the Constitution. All right, so with that in mind, there has been a lot of policy change in the past couple of decades. Juan Pablo, let me ask you about the Pritzker administration's climate goals. What were they? How well is the state doing to meet or not meet them?
Yeah, sure thing. So about 4 years ago, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, and that committed the state to, at the time, one of the most ambitious climate targets in the Midwest. Essentially, what it said was that by 2050, the state would phase out fossil fuels in favor of clean energy. And to get there, it would have to meet a bunch of deadlines for things like decarbonizing the power sector, propping up electric vehicles, and then fast-tracking a clean energy workforce to then get it all done. On almost all of those counts, except for the workforce, we're falling short. And so take just renewable energy. The state wanted to rely on renewable energy, so that's like solar and wind, for a quarter of its energy by this year, by 2025. But the most recent figures show that renewables only made up something like 13.5% of electricity generation in Illinois. So we're short. And add on top of that, another deadline for that 13.5% that we have figure to more than double over the next 5 years by 2030. So things are getting a little tricky and a little hairy fast. But to be fair, Illinois has one of the cleanest grids in the country. So nuclear energy, that's essentially carbon-free energy, makes up over 50% of the state's energy portfolio. And nuclear could be a pretty controversial topic, but any way you spin it, the state is currently over halfway there in terms of cutting fossil fuels from energy production. So we aren't starting from scratch, essentially.
All right, Jack, how about that? Nuclear, there is this renewed interest in nuclear power. A lot of it seems to be driven by this hunger for data centers and chips and compute power for so-called artificial intelligence. What do you think of that? I know we and I think Jen and I have also talked about this idea. Is nuclear power clean power? Is it green power? Where do you stand on that, Jack Darren?
Well, while nuclear power does create power without carbon emissions, there are lots of other environmental things to consider, from uranium mining and the impact that has on indigenous communities to the waste. We have more nuclear waste than any state in the country, and it's simply sitting in our communities alongside our waterways with no plans active for a federal site to dispose of it. So the nuclear moratorium that we've had in place for a long time is primarily because of that we wouldn't build new reactors that would create more of the waste until we had something to do with the waste we already have. Absolutely, we are working on solutions to AI and data centers and the power that is adding to the grid. Some are touting nuclear. Nuclear would be by far the most expensive and the most delayed way to try to address those channels. Like the last nuclear power plant that's been tried to be built in America is in Georgia. It's still not functioning nearly two decades after it began. Its cost overruns are now at $30 billion. And we just think that there are much quicker and faster and cleaner things we could be investing in, like just making sure that we meet those clean energy goals that Juan Pablo laid out. We've got a proposal in the Clean and Reliable Grid Act that we're hoping the General Assembly is going to enact this spring, which would help us speed up how fast we're putting renewables online, building transmission to help connect it to our homes and businesses, and continue to improve our energy efficiency programs. That's the best way and the cheapest way to address our energy needs, is to make sure we're not wasting as much. So yes, some are talking about nuclear, but it's a very far off, very expensive solution with waste problems we haven't solved yet.
Jen, can you talk about, I don't know if you followed this, I'm sure you have, this story out of Chicago where the city is now powering some municipal infrastructure, you know, through a giant solar farm in Sangamon County, west of Springfield, if I have that right. And, you know, it's one of those things I've wondered about this. Is there like Jevons paradox, where like you make things more efficient and it doesn't actually result in efficiency gains? People just use up the electricity in a way. I mean, this is on paper in some ways, right? The city is not actually, doesn't have like special power lines that connect to this solar field 3.5 hours south of the city. It's they're sort of like buying offsets, right? Maybe this is a way of getting into the bigger question of like actual construction of renewable energy. There's this argument happening nationally now about abundance, and are there too many environmental impediments to construction and doing some of these things? You know, did the Biden administration move fast enough to spend some of that money in the Inflation Reduction Act? It's a big question, but where do you think things stand, and where could there be room for improvement on that?
Yeah, I definitely think that we want to encourage renewable energy deployment. We want to do it as fast as possible, but we're still in a world where not all renewable energy is created equal. I mean, even we had the discussion about renewable energy in the Climate Equitable Jobs Act. We want to prioritize renewable energy that's built in Illinois. And with any energy, even if you're next door to a coal plant, you can't guarantee that all the black electrons from the coal plant is definitely what is powering your home exactly. Those electrons go into the grid, unless you're using distributed generation and you're not hooked up to the grid at all. The electrons are going into the grid, they're going somewhere, and it really is about the generation and mix. And to us, what the city of Chicago is doing is getting to be the highest and best things that we can do in terms of renewable energy. There's a lot of places where, people have been buying renewable energy credits that already got renewable energy credits in their state. So cheap wind out of different places that is already financed. And our goal is to get this energy built And to get it built in Illinois, and Chicago is doing exactly the right thing that it needs to do with the site that it's putting forward.
All right. And Jen, let's talk a little more then about the, I know you were involved in the Future Energy Jobs Act, Clean Energy Jobs Act. Those are state laws. Could those be affected by what the Trump administration is doing in Washington?
Well, I think that there are efforts to look at climate emission goals with the executive order that the president has put out. Most of that is targeted towards the sort of climate superfund laws that are looking at requiring those that are those 100 companies with the greatest carbon emissions to pay to the state to reimburse it for the damage that has been done. And, you know, like that's the target, but I've seen some pieces where, you know, anything that is a climate goal, whether it's a state or it's the city of Evanston and in a stretch code, are things that folks want to see be targets of that executive order. But, you know, that executive order, I know I'm stealing a friend of mine, what she keeps saying, but it's just vibes. You know, there's not a real legal ability to go after these climate emission laws with that executive order quite yet. And so, you know, there's definitely risk in us tackling climate or how the federal government will go after it. But I think we'll be able to continue to go after our goals.
Jack, let me also ask you about another a bipartisan effort in Illinois, a sort of throwback environmental program to ban carbon sequestration underneath the Mahomet Aquifer, which is a water source for hundreds of thousands of people in central Illinois. What do you think of that?
I think it's crucial. I think that we reached an agreement last year to put the strongest safeguards, generally speaking, on carbon sequestration. But one thing we couldn't get done last year was to particularly to protect the Mahomet Aquifer. Mahomet is Illinois' only sole source aquifer. That means it's been designated as really the communities that drink from it don't really have viable alternatives. And if carbon sequestration were to leak, which in our first experimental wells, we have seen leaks already, then it changes the nature of the groundwater and it can cause toxic contaminants in the rock to leach into the water and therefore drinking water. And cleaning Mahomet, should it get polluted in that way, really is not an option. So yeah, we're pleased to see Republicans and Democrats pass legislation in the Illinois Senate, the hope that we hope the House will consider soon. Senator Paul Faraci was the lead in the Senate and Representative Carol Ammons in the House to not, if we are going to be sequestering in Illinois, let's not do it through this sole source aquifers that is so crucial for central Illinois.
All right, let's go to the phones, 800-222-9455. Just about 5 minutes left in our conversation. Paul in Urbana, line one. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it just went out that there is a moratorium on nuclear installations in Illinois, and I think that's wrong. The U of I has signed a contract with Nano Nuclear to put a mini modular plant right at the Abbott Power Plant site, and I'm aghast. I'm very worried about this experimentation. There's no reason to do it in the middle of town to start with, if it's a good idea at all. And I agree entirely with what is economists call the opportunity cost, putting so much money on the front end on nuclear when it could be better spent on rolling out battery and other energy storage and renewables. So yeah, I'm glad I got a word in here. Thanks.
All right, Paul, thanks for that. Jendy, can you speak to that? I think the moratorium, what, it ends in January of next year, and it's going to allow for these micro or small reactors, less than 300 megawatts of power. Can you?
Yeah, there's the small modular nuclear reactors, but I think there's actually, because U of I was approved even before the 10 milliwatt reactor was approved, even before that small was gotten rid of. And I think there's an exception for research, and I was actually just looking at the statute, but the large is still in place, and we'd like to see it continue to stay in place. I think that the U of I's reactor was underway well before the small modular nuclear reactor moratorium was removed, and I I think it's because it's a research reactor.
Okay. Juan Pablo, I want to ask you about one of your other stories that you've covered in this regard, the U.S. and Canada, which Canadian elections did not turn out the way the pundits had thought a few months ago before President Trump started talking about making Canada the 51st state. But that's not what we're going to talk about. You covered the relationship that the U.S. and Canada used to have with regard to managing the Great Lakes. Talk more about that and where things stand now, and briefly, please.
Yeah, sure. So for a long time, for like over 100 years, the co-governance of the Great Lakes has worked really well. In fact, some people I've spoken to have called it like the gold standard for how sovereign nations share a water source. And it goes back like 100 years, back to a treaty signed in 1909 between Canada and the United States. Basically, it just sets out how the two nations are going to share this water. Just because of a rough patch between the United States and Canada, things like the tariff dispute between the two countries, talk of Canada becoming the 51st state, a very literal direct challenge to Canada's sovereignty. But also, the New York Times had reported that President Trump, in a February call with then President or Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, said that he wanted to revisit the sharing of lakes and rivers between the two nations. So that really well-working agreement that they had. And that got a bunch of Great Lakes advocates worried that that rough patch was a warning sign that the two countries and the way that they protected the Great Lakes could become something like collateral damage in this kind of growing geopolitical rift.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up. All right, Jack Darren, just a couple of minutes left. What are you looking ahead to with regard to environmental policy in the weeks, months, and years ahead?
Well, I think, you know, we're coming up on the end of a legislative session in which we want to pass legislation to help us reach those clean energy goals. Again, we've got the clean and reliable grid out there. We hope we'll see some real progress on that. I don't think we've talked about wetlands protection, which is a place that Trump's Supreme Court has really taken away protection for most of these areas in Illinois that are so critical for water quality and flood protection and wildlife. There's legislation pending in Illinois that would fill that loophole and have the state step in where the feds have stepped back. We're working on some very exciting efforts to get plastics out, plastics like styrofoam and plastic bags, which we see so much of. I know Jen's doing great work on that. Hopefully we're going to be able to move some efforts to minimize plastic waste. I mean, the list goes on and on, and we just primarily will need to be investing in our environmental protection bureaucracy so we can meet challenges like those and the ones that are going to come in the years ahead.
We're going to have to leave it there. Jack Darren is head of the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club, Jen Walling, executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council, and Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco, Midwest climate reporter for WBEZ and Grist. Juan Pablo, Jack, Jen, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
And happy belated Earth Day to everyone. Coming up after the break, we are going to be revisiting our conversation, first aired 4 years ago, on how the practice of Zen Buddhism can help us embrace the change of seasons, especially spring. Talk about how we can apply those ideas in our lives. That's all coming up after the break. This is the 21st Show.